If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
People can change anything they want to. And that means everything in the world. Show me any country, and there'll be people in it. It's time to take the humanity back into the center of the ring and follow that for a time. You know, think on that. Without people, you're nothing. Without people, you're nothing.
Stoke the fire.
Welcome to episode 69. Insert, that's my favorite number joke here, of Stoke the Fire. As always, we're your hosts, Matt Stocks and Jesse Leach. We returned last week after a slight breakaway with our dear old friend and esteemed honorary member of the Campfire crew, Father Maximus McIntyre, for a lovely and productive and insightful conversation. And this one is going to be more open format, Campfire Q&A style. Been a while since we've done one of these. We put up a post on social media and the Patreon page. We've had a bunch of responses and comments, so we're going to endeavor to get through as many as possible. And then I'm sure just veer off in all kinds of tangents and see where the conversation goes. Indeed. As always with these ones, there's no plan other than to delve deep and have some fun as well and catch up, as it's been a while since you and I have really sat down and shot the shit. So how are you, first and foremost? How the devil are you?
Yeah, I'm well overall. Ups and downs. I think the basic overall theme for me has been challenging myself with this record that I've been working on forever. It's been a year now since the initial meeting with the Killswitch Boys, demoing till now. So a year of digging deep into my psyche and trying to write songs and rewriting songs and sort of presenting stuff and having it been sent back to me. I was just saying to Purple in the Kitchen that this record might be the most difficult one that I've had to write so far. But I do think that that is building a interesting, unique record. But, you know, it's kind of taken a little bit of a toll on me mentally. It's been, as I was saying in our chat with Father Maximus, you know, losing sight of your purpose, wondering if you're good enough to keep doing this, like all that shitty, insecure stuff that pops up when you're sort of in a, existential sort of crisis of like,
I was going to say the right thing, but that's more poignant.
Yeah. So I'd say that's the running theme throughout, but other than that, just navigating life, getting ready, planning the wedding for next year with Purple and I, and just everyday stuff. How about yourself, man? How are you?
Well, before I answer that, a couple of things I wanted to kind of focus on. One being, art, I think, has the potential to completely liberate any sense of bad feelings. And the reason I sort of mentioned that is I saw today a news story that the Foo Fighters are going to be putting out a new record soon. And this new single, which they just dropped, is pretty obviously about the loss of Taylor and them dealing with that. And I just think a brave move and but also a vital move from a band like that, because, you know, Dave is obviously no stranger to losing a bandmate and having to kind of decide how to proceed after such a loss, obviously with Kurt and Nirvana. And although he is the Foo Fighters, Taylor was clearly his guy and his, you know, confidant and best friend and creative collaborator and brother, really. And I did think, like, will they continue as a band after that? And seeing that they have, I think, is incredible. And it just got me thinking about, you know, the ways in which musicians, but all creatives and artists can use their creative voice to explore any manner and any number of things, both good and bad, that they might be going through. So you say that this has been the hardest record of your career. Is that because of things that you've been struggling with as a human, or more so just finding your creative voice in these times and in this point in your life?
I think it's a mixture of both. You know, I think that I am my own worst enemy when it comes to my creativity, and I'm my greatest ally. And I think that, you know, going through the cycles of my brain and depression and anxiety, those things that are difficult to deal with, that also severely inspire me, it feels very sort of bipolar in a way, where there are moments where I'm working on a song and I feel, oh, this is it. This is great. And then there are moments where I'm like, wow, shit. And I'll go dark. I can't help it. I'm like, did I lose it? Like, am I not good enough? And it might sound silly to some people, but that can destroy me for days. If I'm not doing well with the one thing I'm supposed to be doing, it can destroy me, and it will affect me on a whole other level into my personal relationships and people that have to deal. Like, you know, I feel bad for Purple sometimes because I mope around the house, and then I'll write a good song and I'm in a great mood. It's like, it's just up and down, up and down.
Which Jesse am I going to get today?
Yeah. But I think, you know, another thing I do have to say is I've never done a record where, you know, everybody is so hands-on. In the past, those guys would give demos. I'd do my best to sort of sort them out, and then it would just be Adam and I figuring out the song. With this record, we've opened it up to a real group discussion where everybody's got their opinion on this song. So I'm dealing with four different guys that have four different opinions critiquing what I'm doing. So that's made it quite difficult. But now that I'm sort of on the other side of it, the record is mapped out enough where I've kind of got a perspective on it. I'm seeing that this process, as painstaking as it is going to create a record that is going to sound different, that is going to challenge me and has challenged me to write differently, to use different words, to use different analogies, to talk about different subjects. It's really pushed me to do better and expand myself. So all in all, I'd see it as a positive thing, but it has not been easy.
Well, somebody, I'm doing great, by the way. We can just... We can just wrap it up real short and leave it at that. Cause yeah, I'm doing absolutely awesome. 10 out of 10. Great.
That's fucking great to hear, dude.
Life's been really good as of late, and I'm in a really good place, and lots of exciting things going on over summer. I'm about to be heading out to Barcelona in 24 hours.
Yes.
My favorite band of all time. Three Nights on the Bounce. Going to be DJing the closing party with Melvin from NoFX. And then I'm going to go see them again in the UK the week after that. Then it's Slam Dunk. DJing and hosting the stage there with so many great, great friends of old, from Flogging Molly to Less Than Jake to Bowling for Soup to Gogo Bordello. Who else is on the bill? Zebrahead. Tons of bands I've known for years. And then after that, I'm going to this festival in Austria called S-BAM. I'm going to go see NoFX again there because it's their final tour, quote unquote.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get in as many moments with the band and as, you know, go to as many shows as possible. And then Rancid are playing out there as well. And then Flogging Molly and Bowling for Soup and Zebrahead and Frank Turner and a bunch of the bands who are on the Slam Dunk bill. But then a few others, Enter Shikari as well. So then that's that. And then the weekend after that is Download. And I'm going to be, I haven't announced this yet, but I'm sure by the time this goes out, it will have been announced. I'm doing a live podcast from Download and a DJ set. And then after that, this is all week after week after week after week. After that, I go to Copenhagen, to Copenhell. I'm going to be doing some live Q&As and a DJ set out there. And then I go straight from Copenhagen to Hellfest in France and doing a DJ set out there. And so that is from this week till the end of June. Basically every weekend I'm at a festival.
You are on your grind, brother. That's so beautiful. It's really nice to hear because I remember... months ago, you're just wondering what's going on and sort of like, you know, you felt like your wheels were spinning. But look at you, man. Congratulations. That makes me really happy.
And I've just confirmed a live Q&A at Wacken Festival in Germany with this guy called Jesse Leach.
That's so funny.
Did you know about that yet?
When I got that email, I was laughing so hard. I was like, this cheeky fucking bastard, of course. Like, of course I'm going to. But that festival, it actually works out really well because I have a day off before. So it's actually perfect timing. Because, you know, I've just been all over the place with my schedule and my brain has just been everywhere. But when I got that message from my Kenny, my manager, I just had a laugh. I'm like, this fucking guy, he's going to the proper channels. But yeah, that's going to be great. I'm looking forward to that too, man.
So if anybody listening to this is listening from Germany or they're going to Wacken Festival, look out. And yeah, we'll keep you posted. But Jesse and I will be doing what will essentially be a live episode of Stoke the Fire from Wacken Festival, which is going to be amazing.
That's so cool. That's amazing.
Going to be doing ones with Jim from Pennywise and Vili Velo from him out there as well. And then I'll see you the following week at Bloodstock. I'm going to, if it's okay with you, come and hang out for the day and follow you around.
Oh, of course. Of course, man. Yeah, we're flying in and flying out of that one. It's going to be in and out. So yeah, catch me while you can.
I will.
And we're headlining. It's like incredible. It's to headline a festival like that, to me, that's next level. So it's going to be one for the books for sure.
Hell yeah. So yeah, life's amazing. But you just mentioned there about writer's block to some extent, maybe not writer's block, but, you know, figuring out your way through the trees. Somebody on the Instagram page, Stoke the Fire Instagram, wanted to ask you if you had any writing tips for anybody who has struggled or is struggling with, I guess, more the emotional and creative end of writer's block and getting this sense of like, have I said everything there is to say? What else have I got left to say? What could you maybe suggest as some, you know, good methods and tips of working through that and around that?
Yeah. I'd first and foremost say that writer's block is sort of a lie that you tell yourself. And I think anyone who's creative or has an interest in writing or is a writer, you've just got to keep writing, period. Even if it's something that doesn't feel inspired, continue to exercise your craft and find out when your brain is best at it. I feel like for me, when I first wake up in the morning, I'm ready. Like that's where my creative juices go. So I'll ignore the entire world and focus on writing. Maybe pick topics you wouldn't normally write about, or tell a story, tell somebody else's story, look at things around you, look at someone that you're close to that you're observing what they're going through. Look at, you know, what's going on in the world. There's plenty of things to draw inspiration from. Sometimes it's not going inward. Sometimes it's reaching for what's going on around you, but keep yourself disciplined. Write. Show up for yourself. Discipline will lead to inspiration. So that's the way out, is just be obsessed with what you're doing. And you'll eventually get out of it. And you'll realize, like, even the idea of you being numb and not being able to write is a topic you can write about. And I actually did write about feeling just numb and just not having direction. And I found a creative way to write about that. I'm not sure if it's going to make the record, but I was proud of myself. You know, I have a bunch of stuff that I've written that may not make it, but it was a stepping stone to get to where I needed to get re-inspired again. So discipline is key. Continue to write, show up for yourself, and don't just feel like you lost it. Work on it.
I think as well, if I could shed some of my non-songwriter, but just writer perspective in the mix, writing what you know about is always what's taught in creative writing. You know, is turning the everyday around you into works of either fiction or poetry or whatever. Because inspiration's everywhere. It doesn't need to come from inside. Externally, it's everywhere. The minute you open the door and look around you. And I think writing and reading go hand in hand as well, being a big reader myself. Every time I read anything, I'm inspired in some way, whether or not I make something of that idea. You just get ideas popping into your head. And as much as the news can sometimes be a bum out, when I think about the amount of songs and films that have stemmed as a direct result from a real life story that somebody has seen in the paper and they've gone, oh my God, that would make a great film, or that would be a topic for a song. And we could write that into, you know, a short story or whatever it is. But I think just picking up the newspaper and looking what's going on in the world. Maybe not so much the politics, but you know what I mean? Just local news stories in your area. So much inspiration can be drawn from that.
Mm.
And reading novels and basically trying to not watch TV. As amazing as TV is for me, TV for me is purely escapist entertainment. And I've recently sold off all my vinyls because I'm trying to downscale my, you know, music library and just life in general. And a lot of people at the two fairs that I hosted, you know, everybody would want to ask, why are you selling your vinyl? Why are you getting rid of them? And for me, I never listen to music at home unless it's like, you know, late at night and I've got a couple of friends over and we're kind of sat around having a bit of an after party or whatever it is. I never listen to music at home because I listen to music so much when I'm out and about with my headphones in on trains and planes and everything. And then I DJ, obviously, you know, two, sometimes three nights a week. So when I get home, I like to just switch off, put the TV on, but I never watch the TV and get inspired to, like, you know what I mean? write or do anything. It's more just like, you know, you're vegging out and switching off. So yeah, I'd say switch the TV off. If you're looking for inspiration, pick up a newspaper or a book and draw inspiration that way. And then, as you say, just in the practice of doing is where you release the creativity, isn't it? Discipline is everything. And comedians say this all the time. It's like, just set aside an hour a day. You know, even if you write 10 shit jokes, one of them might be a half good enough joke to then be developed into a bit that then becomes part of your routine. But you need that regularity and consistency.
Yeah, I think reading is important. That's a good one. I actually need to do more of that myself. But yeah, I like what you said, you know, because I think people think inspiration, which it can, just will hit just you over the
strike you like a lightning bolt. Yeah.
Which it can, but it's, you know, that's kind of the myth of like being a creative. You have to work for it. You have to have discipline. That's it. And it's not, discipline is such a boring word to creatives, but it's so fucking crucial. So yeah, good stuff.
I guess as well, a lot of the time, and everybody works differently, but a lot of people I know start with the title. So sometimes if you can just think of a good title, then you can work from there and create the topic around the title. Obviously, some people go the other way and the title is the last thing. But I think if you just go, oh, what would make a good song? Like, you know, two words, a phrase, whatever it is, and then go from there. That's a nice nucleus.
The song I'm working on right now, I did exactly that. Like, the word hit me and I was like, ooh. I even, like, if you open my phone and go to my notes, there are one word things all over it because I'm like, ooh, idea for a song. And I'll take that word, I'll meditate on it, I'll put it on the paper, and the ideas will flow. And you write about that word. That's a great idea. Good advice.
There we go. You can have that for free, Instagram commenter. Brandon off Patreon says, do you, Jesse Leach, have any plans of just yourself and a guitar belting out any acoustical originals anytime? Is that something you would ever, like an Eddie Vedder style?
Yeah, I don't have
you in a ukulele even.
Yeah, I don't have the skills to do an instrument and sing at the same time quite yet. And if I do that in the future, it would be most likely with piano as opposed to guitar. But I would say not anytime soon. And I do have opportunities to work with other musicians to do that type of thing. So that might come first. And again, that piano might be the way for me. I would love to do that someday, but I haven't put the discipline in to hone my skills enough to do that. So not in the near future.
I think with you, if I can be so bold, you're not always your best cheerleader and motivator.
No, I'm not.
And so I think, you know, I don't think it's laziness at all. I think it's self-doubt. And like, you know, you just, I think if you had someone, and that's obviously where writing with Adam and working with him on Times of Grace and Killswitch and these things come from, is you have someone to kind of push you and drive you. But yeah, I know from just knowing you that you're not necessarily the guy who has the most sense of like self-belief and like self-motivation to like, yeah, I'm going to get this done. I believe in me.
True.
And you should.
Thank you. I'm working on that shit. Like,
no argument.
No, I know it's true. And, you know, it's something I think a lot of people struggle with, that inner voice. You know, just did a hike the other day with a dear friend of ours. Her name's Carolyn. Me and Purple and Carolyn, and the entire talk was about, you know, how you view yourself and how to motivate yourself, and that inner voice, that self talk, and when it's negative, it can beat you down and you believe it, and it will inhibit your growth. It'll inhibit your creativity and your goals and your aspirations. You got to be really careful with the way you talk to yourself. That's huge. So I'm working on it.
Good. Brian Hoover, Jesse Leach again. Will we see a Times of Grace mini tour anytime in the future?
I don't know. I don't have an answer to that one. The last time Adam and I talked about it, it wasn't looking so good. I mean, between just budget alone to get that thing off the ground and then, you know, what we could potentially make from it, it's just not looking good. And then timetable-wise between Killswitch and everything Adam does, I would love for that to happen at some point, but I wouldn't say not for a couple of years, if at all. And it's, to me, it's a huge bummer, because I think that Songs of Loss and Separation was one of the best records I was a part of. And it just kind of fell by the wayside. But such is life, and I don't rule it out. But as far as my scope for the next couple of years, I can't see it happening.
Bummer.
Yeah.
Bummer, man. However, to anybody who is a fan of seafaring voyages and Killswitch Engage, you did recently announce that you guys finally, because I know we spoke about this before and you were like, oh, the rest of the guys aren't so keen on the idea, but you're heading out on a cruise, my man. Well, you're actually doing two cruises.
I am, yeah. One of the cruises is a DJ gig that Purple's going to dance with me, so it's the two of us on stage together. And then this is going to be announced soon, so I can't really give full details, but I will be doing three or four songs with a acoustic-y collective act. They're not my songs, but I've been hired to sing them, and it's with someone I admire very much. So that'll be unique.
This is on the Lamb of God cruise for anybody.
Lamb of God cruise, yep.
Yeah.
I wish I was coming on that.
I'll be on the
That'll be a fun one. Yeah, and the lineup is ridiculous for that one. It's crazy.
Well, Brittany will actually be on that. So you should
I saw her out and
hang out with her and Purple. But yeah, she is definitely going on that. And that is just before the Flogging Molly one, which I will be on. But I'll be out on the road whilst the Lamb of God one's happening. So I'll miss that. So you're doing that. And then you're also, is it the Monsters of Rock cruise? Is that the one?
Shiprocked, which is coming up in February. Yeah, we finally committed to it. And Purple will be with me on that. Part of the deal of accepting that gig was the fact that we could all bring our ladies and make a thing out of it. So all the ladies are coming too, the Killswitch ladies. So it'll be a big Killswitch family cruise with an interesting lineup of bands as well. So it'll be good.
Dude, it'll be beyond good. I'm telling you. I mean, the Lamb of God one is first, so you'll have already experienced what they're like. You're going to have the best time. You're going to love it.
I think so too. I think so too. It's something I wanted to do for years now. So it's nice that they finally caved and accepted it. And that Lamb of God offered me to come DJ. That to me was just like, I didn't see that coming. It's awesome.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Where was my call, Randy? Cheers. let's go down the list. So what bands would you love to tour with? I can answer this one as well, because obviously I tour too. So I'll let you go first. You want me to go first? All right.
Yeah, go first. Yeah, you talk. You talk. He's
pointing at me, ladies and gentlemen. So, I mean, Airborne is one, just because they're such dear friends. I'm amazed it hasn't happened already, to be honest. I've been on them for years about trying to make it happen. It's always interesting to me, the politics that are involved with bands. I find it hilarious that often it's not the bands themselves who make the calls for their own tours. This is something that I don't know whether kind of people who are in the kind of just the fan end of the music community know this, but just, you know, spilling the dirt, but a lot of the time it's booking agents and managers and, like, you know, deals. And it's very rare, I think, that unless bands really put the foot down and go, this is the bill we want, it's rare that the bands themselves, I think, choose the whole bills. And you can tell the ones that do. And this isn't me slagging Airborne at all. This is just kind of, you know, my frustrations with many of the people I've spoken to on the more industry side of things is like, I know I'd be great for this tour. And they go, yeah, but there's, you know, this person to please and that. But Airborne, I would love to tour with. I just know that we'd have the best time. I'd do the best rock and roll DJ set and we'd just get to spend, you know, lots of time on the road with my friends. That being said, Killswitch as well, I'd actually love to tour with you guys for the same reason, just to hang out with you every day and see the world with you. And obviously, you know, love the Kill Switch show. I think it's a really fun and awesome live show. I know I could bring stuff to that. AC/DC would be
yes,
obviously a dream come true. Kiss, I put myself forward to go on tour with Kiss. Obviously I did the cruise, but I put myself to go on the UK dates that they've got coming up. Didn't get that, unfortunately, but you know, understand why, because I am a mere blip in the world of rock and roll entertainment. But yeah, I think they'd be some of the top ones, mainly just friends and or bands who are, you know, my favorite kind of stadium arena bands. So some realistic expectations, some very unrealistic expectations. And then, I mean, the Rolling Stones, I don't want much, do I? But yeah, AC/DC, Kiss, Rolling Stones, Killswitch Airborne, NoFX. I'd love to actually get on some of these final NoFX dates. I've got some after parties planned with Melvin, but like to do some of the shows themselves would be an absolute dream come true. I've shared the stage with them before at the Slam Dunk dates they did a couple of years ago, and that was phenomenal. But yeah, for me, it's not necessarily, well, I guess it is about bands that I love, but it's more about people that I love, because that's what touring is, isn't it? Is being on the road with people that you love.
Yeah. So for me, the bands I'd like to tour with wouldn't really necessarily make sense. I'd have to use my political brain and say what would work for Killswitch. I have two separate lists. I'd say Wolfheart, first of all. Those guys, I did a song with them and I've seen them play, and they're just a great band. They mix melodic metal, death metal, a little bit of black metal, and they're just great dudes, like really good solid humans. I think a band that everyone should check out, if you're like metal, you definitely need to check out Wolfheart. Next up, I'd say Catatonia, another melodic band that I love, that are great. They're really heavy, but the vocals are soothing and melodic. I think that those bands could work with Killswitch. As much as this wouldn't really work, and I doubt it would ever happen, I love the Deftones. I think the Deftones would be a great band to play with. But we are a bit jokey, and those guys kind of put on more of a serious show. Metallica, I can speak for all of us in Killswitch and say Metallica would be a goalpost band for all of us. And I'm going to say Iron Maiden again. I'd love to get the opportunity to open for Iron Maiden again, because that's probably one of the best experiences of my touring career and life that I've had so far. Absolutely love them. And I'm going to throw Rancid in on that as well. I would love, it would be unique, but I would love Rancid and Killswitch to do a tour. I think that would be odd, but cool, like fun, if nothing else. And I love that band. I love their music. And I think some of the stuff we play could work, but who knows?
So that's I'm going to see them in a couple of weeks, and they bring the thunder. Always love seeing Rancid live. I had a thought off the back of something you just said then, and it slipped my damn mind. No, it's gone. All right, cross that one off the list. So
I need to warn anyone listening or watching, or listening, I should say. My cat is currently taking a shit in her litter box right there. If you hear me making grunting noises or whatever, it's because it's going to stink soon. So just a heads up. Yeah, the cat taking a shit staring at me. Oh, boy.
Alex P, our old friend Alex P, if you could hang out with any musician, so this isn't tour, this is just hang out socially. If you could hang out with any musician, whom would it be?
You want to go first?
Tom Waits.
I was going to say that.
Well, maybe the three of us can all hang out. It's not an exclusive party. I'll allow you to hang out with me and Tom.
Tom Waits for the win, 100%. Just the amazing human being.
I interviewed Tommy Stinson from The Replacements the other day, and it was a fucking amazing interview. Like, absolute legend of a man. Replacements, one of my all-time favorite bands. If anybody who likes REM and Pixies and Nirvana and bands like that, and you haven't delved into The Replacements, check out their album Let It Be. It's so good. And then he was in Guns N' Roses for like 15 years as the bassist in Guns. So he's been in two of the, you know, best and most revered rock and roll bands of all time. And he's, you know, met and spent time with everybody during his two times in those bands. And he was telling me about the times he's hung out with Tom Waits. And I was just like, man, just you can only imagine not only the quality of the stories, but the way in which he delivered them.
Sure.
You could just sit there for hours and just be entertained beyond belief. He, for me, when I read this question, I immediately didn't even need to think. It was just like, yeah, Tom Waits every day.
Same. You know, and anyone who doesn't know, just go on YouTube and look up Tom Waits interviews. Some of the best ones are David Letterman. He's done some great ones with David. But look up Tom Waits interviews. The guy is just, he doesn't even have to say a word. He sits down in his chair, adjusts his hat, and you're, I'm like, what's next? He's just, he's brilliant. He's a character. He's a living, he's like if a storybook character came to life and existed out of the book, that's who Tom Waits is. He's just brilliant.
Let's stay in this kind of fun hypothetical world for a minute then. So Parker Luckenbach on Instagram has said, so it's summer, you've got a big barbecue happening. What do you bring and who do you invite? What do the you know, the requirements of the best barbecue fall into for you, Jesse? Go with your food selections and beverage suggestions first.
So I have a unique diet. So when I barbecue,
here we go, gluten free. It's coming.
Yeah, So I wouldn't even add gluten to the mix. I would just go for like a whole fish. I would stuff a fish with herbs and spices and probably do like a side of like a couple sides of sauces to go with it. Fresh cilantro, probably some tamarind chutney on the side. And it would be ice cold gluten-free beer, or like a really good white or an orange wine. And I would do grilled veggies, probably like broccoli or asparagus, marinated in like salt, pepper, and balsamic vinegar. Yeah, maybe some big mushrooms marinated and grilled to perfection. So yeah, mushrooms, whole fish, maybe some shrimp, and then not on the grill, but to add to it, some quinoa, some rice, some grains to go with that shit. So that's my style of barbecue. I know it's not for everybody, but I'm a fairly healthy guy, so that's where I would go.
No, I'm all over that. I was thinking salmon for mine, so
yeah.
I'd happily gorge on your entire fish. And then I was going to go with, you know, broccoli and courgettes and stuff like that to accompany a nice little salsa. And you got to have corn on the cob all day.
Yes, love that.
Every day you got to have corn on the cob. And refreshment-wise, I'd have 1,000 beers. I'd try and find like a swimming pool-size cooler. Obviously, I'm assuming transportation is no issue here, but I would have a swimming pool-size cooler with 1,000 beers in. And I just have that on a mountain of ice.
Yeah, you gotta have beers at a cookout. And I'm happy to report there's a company called Ghost Fish Head here in the States that makes gluten-free beer that tastes precisely like beer. Like I'm so happy that I found them. I just had a couple the other day after while I was cooking out. And you don't have to be sad anymore if you're gluten-free. There are companies here in the States that make great gluten-free beers.
I'd probably just go with Miller Lite, to be honest.
There you go.
Because I love it. I don't get to drink that because it's basically unavailable in the UK. So whenever I come to the States, a Miller Lite always goes down a treat. And guest-wise, so who are we inviting? Again, I'd have to say Tom Waits. He's just part of our... He's part of the inner circle now, so he'd be there. I would also say, and I'm not just saying this to kiss ass, I'd say every single person that we've had on Stoke the Fire as a guest since launching the show. We were talking to Maximus last week about the energy in the room of, you know, previous guests all hanging out and exchanging, you know, energy together and how wonderful that was. And that was maybe only six or so at the most, maybe a couple more. Let's say 7 to 8 of the guests that have been on the show were at that live event. But I'd want, you know, all 60 odd, all there. And Tom Waits. So that would basically just be a Stoke the Fire live event. And then we could just throw to Tom for campfire songs and stories. And I'd be happy with that. You know, obviously, maybe Johnny Depp would be a nice addition to the guest list as well. Like, I'm sure there's plenty of cool people that I would want. But I would be stoked with literally just our guest pond. Any listeners who want to attend, obviously open invitation to them. And then just Tom Waits, one star guest. Sometimes one's enough.
You know, I'm going to have to agree with that. I'm going to just tack in, because he was a guest, and it has to be mentioned again, Vinny Stigma. He could also hold court as well. I love that guy.
Vinny's there. Vinny's going to be there. Him and the father.
Hey, father. Could you imagine him and Tom Waits? Would Tom Waits handle Vinny Stigma?
I'm sure when we did that live event, and I never quite got confirmation or closure on this, but I'm pretty sure that Vinny Stigma talked about going round to either Lars Fredriksson's house and Robin Williams was there, or Robin Williams' house and Lars Fredriksson was there. And I was just like, how, why, what? What's going on? I didn't dream that, did I?
No, you're correct. Yeah, I know. I can't imagine. Robin Williams. Man, if that man was still alive, he would be on the guest list, including Joe Strummer as well, obviously.
VIP for life. Yeah. Heather would like to know, if we weren't in the careers that we were in, what would we be doing? What could we see ourselves doing? I think I've spoke about this before. For me, it would be teacher. Easy, definitely done. Not easy, but you know, that would be an easy choice for me. Apart from that, being a bartender in somewhere like, you know, the Dominican Republic or Hawaii, somewhere kind of off grid, you know, a little shack bar, not too much of a kind of high turnover in terms of like clientele, so it wasn't too busy, but it was busy enough to keep the shack going. I think a little bar owner in a nice kind of remote beach destination would be awesome as well. Maybe that could be later down the line. But other than those two things, I really don't think there's any other professional lane I could see myself fully being satisfied in. And I know there's, you know, an absolute array of different jobs out there and things you don't even consider. Oh, I tell you one thing, but it's sort of the same, but being like a music placement guy for movies, so picking soundtracks for films, I don't know how you would get into that work and how people do, but that would be a really incredible profession for me, and I think I would do very well in that role. Yeah, they would be my top three, I think.
Oh, I love that. I didn't even think of that last one. That's a brilliant idea.
Wouldn't it be incredible?
Yeah, I think it really would be. Top of my list has always been park ranger, someone who's out there living in the wilderness and helping take care of it and protect it. But I've been thinking about this a lot lately for various reasons. And I'm going to jump on board with the bartender in a remote location, like a surf punk rock bar, tiki bar or something. I could totally see myself in my older years doing that type of a thing.
Maybe we should open one together one day.
Oh, man. Imagine, and you know, a place you don't have to wear your shoes, like your feet are in the sand, and you know, the menu's small, you get fresh catch and you get tiki drinks, and we play great music and maybe have live acts here and there. Like, that's totally in my wheelhouse. What was the other one? It just escaped my brain. Yeah, I'm having a brain fart.
Where would it sit thematically?
Yeah, what, the bar?
No, the third.
Oh, yeah.
In terms, I don't know. It was a spectrum of professions. Entertainment.
Oh, I know. Actor.
There you go.
I'd love to be like a villainous character actor. I'd love to like embody.
Like Michael Wincott in the 90s.
Yeah, totally. It's like, you know, and not even like main leading guy, like even just bit parts. I'd still love to do that kind of shit. Just acting was my first love before music, like theater. But I would love to do little bit parts or whatever. I would love to explore being somebody that when I come on screen, you're like, oh, that guy's crazy. You know, I can totally do that.
Well, talking of actors, you were recently on the Overrated Everything podcast.
Hosted
by Andy Ellis, who was just on the show, and his This Is England co-star, Thomas Turgoose. So I know how much you love that franchise, and I know how excited you were to have Andy on this show. How was it for you to go and be a guest on that show, and how did they treat you?
Yeah, it was great. It just felt like I was hanging out with pals. Like it was so low key, and like, you know, it was just a chat with friends. Like that's what it felt like, you know. And deep down inside, you know, I could have just asked tons of questions about being a fanboy, but that's not what that podcast is about. So I found it interesting. And I hope I was a decent guest. I don't know. But to me, the whole vibe of it was like just hanging out with my friends. It was great. Those guys are awesome. I have a lot of respect for them. And they're just nice guys, man. Just good guys.
Tomo was on form then. He was in a good mood. He was good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's funny. He's
a bit more standoffish than Andy. And I guess that for me is a result of being that bit more, because they're not far apart in age, but I think he was just exposed to a bit more kind of the intensity of childhood fame than Andy. And I think it's made him slightly more wary. Like Andy's just so warm. He sees you and he's just like, you know, welcomes you in with open arms. But I think with Thomas, it's a bit more hard for him sometimes. But once you kind of crack that shell, he's a total sweetheart as well. And the pair of them together are great, great double act.
Yeah, you can tell they have a lot of inside jokes and you can tell their friendship is there. And I thought it was great. And they have a good dynamic. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was great, man. And I liked Tomo's attitude and the way that he sees life. It's definitely a little more sarcastic, and which to me is funny. I think it's great. But the vibe of those two together, it was great. So, you know, as a fan of you know, what they do, but specifically This Is England, it was definitely something that I consider to be a great moment for my life. It was really fun.
Hell yeah. How was the response? Did you get any feedback? Because I know for a fact that you'd be a you'd be a wild card guest for their show, because their, you know, kind of general guest pond is their acting and kind of, you know, media buddies. So it would have definitely been like a bit of a left field turn, I think, to have you on. But there wasn't any, you know, like cool response or.
No, I hadn't heard anything about it.
Like, it doesn't look like that guy.
Yeah, it doesn't. I'm not even sure how well the episode did. I don't know numbers. I haven't heard a thing about it. But, you know, for me, it was just like, check off the list. I did that. Super cool.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it, isn't it? Sometimes that's all there is, just getting the thing done and experiencing it. And I'm stoked they invited you. And I'm stoked that it happened. And acting. Tell me everything about this experience, because we've never spoken about this before. This seems like a fairly seamless segue into the story. Your uncle's film, you posted about it recently on your Instagram page, and you're like, I was in this film, and it was, who's the writer? It was
the Farrelly brothers, who wrote, yes, Dumb and Dumber, and, you know, Something About Mary, and, you know, what's the other one with Jim Carrey? But yeah, those guys,
myself and Irene.
Yeah. So those guys are kind of like in the periphery of like my family. Like, my uncle's known them for a long time. And they were actually, there was a book called Outside Providence, which I highly recommend. It's a great book. And from that,
all their films are basically set in Rhode Island, aren't they? Like Dumb and Dumber is, and right. Myself and Irene is. Like, I know a lot of people maybe aren't aware of that, but Rhode Island is very much the location of a lot of their work.
Yeah, it's in their blood for sure. So for me, that experience was just, you know, around my uncle seeing to get, and listen, I grew up on sets. I've seen him make movies. You know, he made a great film called Federal Hill. It's a black and white film about, you know, this guy who's connected to the mob that falls in love with this rich student that goes to Brown University. And it's like Ivy League girl and, like, you know, a guy who's connected to the mafia. Great film. Loved it. I was on set for that. And a film called American Buffalo with Dennis Franz and Dustin Hoffman. And it's like a very heavy dialogue, sort of almost art house film. Like, so
John,
you know,
Cassavetes style.
Yeah. Just, you know, you're not going to go there and see big, huge transitions and crazy scenes. You got to really pay attention to the dialogue. So I grew up on that as well. And my father was the location scout, location manager for both those films. So I'd already been into the industry. I've had my feet wet with that stuff. So getting to do Outside Providence, it felt fairly comfortable. It felt like something, oh yeah, I know how to do this. But I learned really quickly that, you know, just because you think you know how to act and just because you were able to get into this film, it's not all easy. Like, there were definitely moments where I felt challenged. And yeah, I remember I ran late one day, got caught in traffic, and the assistant director wore me a new asshole in front of the entire set. Like, it was embarrassed. I was embarrassed.
No and passes, because your uncle's the director.
No passes. Yeah. And he even said it out loud. You know, I was like, you just because, you know, I was like, whoa. So from that point on, I had to show up an hour early to make out, like, as my punishment. But it was a learning curve. And, you know, as fun as it was definitely kind of difficult. But I was also a kid. I was a young kid. I didn't know who I was. And the sort of the sad part of it, too, is I became friends with Jonathan Brandis, who's a pretty famous child actor who ended up taking his own life. And my time on that set and my interaction with him, I could tell he wasn't doing too well. And he kind of latched on to me because I was kind of the lone shark and he was kind of the lone shark. And the rest of the actors very much had sort of a chemistry together. So him and I would spend time on the outskirts. And yeah, there were early signs of him not doing okay. And I was a kid. I didn't know how to deal with it or to extend myself to him. But, you know, a couple of years later, he would take himself out. So that's really sad. But overall, it was an incredible experience. And I would totally do it again now that I'm an adult and like comfortable in my own skin. To watch a film being made, to have the wrap party where everyone celebrates, all the people who are working hard to let loose, to go to the premiere, to see it for the first time, that whole process is awesome. It's super fun.
You reckon we could get one of the Farley brothers on the show? Is the uncle connection still there?
I don't know. I mean, I could definitely ask, but I haven't spoken with them since that time. I know my uncle still keeps in touch. But yeah, possibility. I'd never say no in the realm of possibility for sure. I could reach out to my uncle and see what his schedule looks like too. But you never know.
So Outside of Providence is the film, yeah? For anybody.
Outside Providence, yep.
Intrigued.
Worth a watch. It's become a cult classic, actually, according to a lot of people. And it's endearing. It's funny. It's quirky. But there's like a wholesomeness to it. And the cool thing is not only is my uncle the director, there's footage as the film opens. You're watching these kids playing and you know, sledding down a hill, and it's my family, my mom and my uncles and aunts. Like, it's home video from my family. Then the opening scene is this three-legged dog running down the street, and that three-legged dog I grew up with, her name was Samantha, was my aunt's dog. And throughout the film, my family makes cameos. My dad is actually a driver and where the kids are thumbing a ride, and he's the one that picks them up as they're hitchhiking. So my family's all over that film.
Very cool. And there is an innocent quality to certainly their early work. I think they maybe got a little bit more grotesque and over the top as the years rolled on. But like Dumb and Dumber, although it's silly and it's wacky and it's fucking hilarious, there's real heart at the core, yeah, of the story and those characters. I feel like they lost it with the sequel. But Dumb and Dumber, yeah, is forever one of my favorite films. And it just captures that, you know, kind of youthful innocence that they had, yeah, as filmmakers and that those actors had at that time. And soundtrack's incredible. I've got all the time in the world for Dumb and Dumber. It's just a benchmark comedy film for me, and Something About Mary. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go on record and say that Kingpin was one for me too.
Oh yeah, of course. Of course.
Kingpin's a great one. And if you've seen that film, there's a homeless guy that hangs outside the apartment complex that they interact with. And I think one of the lines is, "Hey, if you drink your own piss, you're going to get sick and die." The guy who's the homeless guy that's doing that is my uncle, who directed Outside Providence. So that's him on the other side of the camera being this character. So yeah, Kingpin's a great one too, man. Woody Harrelson, love it.
And Randy Quaid.
Yes. So good.
Yeah, when you saw that, because it was really weird. I'd heard, I think Peter Farrelly, not Bobby, I think I'd heard Peter on Marc Maron. And then it was like a day or two later, you posted that thing and I'd heard them talk about Outside Providence in this podcast. And then you posted that because we'd never, ever spoken about that. And I'm like, what the hell? Jesse's in a Farley Brothers movie. You learn, yeah, something new every day. You have all these conversations with someone, you know, you go deep, and then they still have the ability to just drop the most impressive anecdotes from out of nowhere. Like, yeah, I've also done this. Amazing.
It's like I almost forget that I've done it. It's kind of wild to look back on that and to like rewatch it again. It's like, I have so many memories attached to that film. It's crazy.
Well, go watch it, people. And I'm definitely going to check it out. Okay. So this is one for me, Scott Pierce. And then we've got one for you from Scott Pierce. Scott says, "Matt, what are your go-to places to eat in the USA?" Now, I haven't spent a lot of time in America, and most of the time spent there has been in Los Angeles, and my food choices are pretty basic, and I'm not necessarily proud of them from a cuisine point of view. But for me, it's all about the buildings and the atmosphere in the place and the history. So every time I'm in Los Angeles, I do one of a few things. I always go and have cheese pizza at the Rainbow. Just get myself one of those red booths and have a big, gigantic margarita pizza, because they're, you know, pretty good. There's probably better pizza out there, but you could do a lot worse than the Rainbow pizzas. And just being in that room where you see like the Guns N' Roses table and the, you know, the Hollywood Vampires sign upstairs and all that cool stuff, obviously where Lemmy used to sit and the Lemmy statue that they now have. So that's always on the list. I always go and have Mexican food at a place called El Compadre on the Sunset Strip, which again is just one of those absolute like Hollywood staples. Such a vibe in the place, really low lit. Again, you have the kind of booths that go around, and there's always like traditional mariachi music playing in there. Awesome. Shamefully, I always squeeze in an In-N-Out burger just because they're so, so good. And I think that's kind of it. And then I had some amazing barbecue. This is all very meaty stuff, I guess, but I had some amazing barbecue food when I was in Austin in Texas. But other than that, for me, it's all about the bars. I'm much more of a dive bar guy, and my friends in Los Angeles at the moment, I sent her this list of about 20 dive bars. I was like, go check out all these places. The first one she went in, she said she had to get escorted out because there was this crazy stuntman in there trying to hit on her. And then it kind of made me realize like, oh yeah, this is like a beautiful girl traveling alone. You probably don't want to go in any of the places where I would go, because they're not like trendy dive bars. They're like dive bars. And then it kind of made me think, not to go on too much of a tangent, but how privileged I am as a man. I think we take this shit for granted, man. Like, because you know, as a bloke, you can pretty much walk into any bar. And me and Aid, we're talking about this recently, my friend Aid, who was a guest on our Patreon page. There's no bar in the world that the pair of us wouldn't go in, even though we know going in there, it's going to be dangerous. It's going to be sketchy. There's going to be wild characters, but you know, you're still going to go in there because 9 times out of 10, although people are like out there, they're all right. As long as, you know, don't show weakness and kind of just, you can have a bit of a crack and a laugh with them. But as a woman, it's a whole different trip.
Yeah.
You just can't go into a bar on your own as a woman often and not be accosted or annoyed. And it made me really upset for her, because I was like, oh man, if I was with you, then it would be a different story. I could show you around. But after the first bar, she said I got, you know, pretty much borderline assaulted by a crazy stunt man. I was like, only in LA. I was like, yeah, you probably want to stick to some of the more, you know, obvious touristy spots. The shit that women have to deal with.
I know. It's a bummer, man. It's something I don't really think about. Because I'm so used to just kind of doing what I please when I'm on tour and just not really worrying about my safety, you know. And I've definitely been into some bars that, you know, could have been dangerous, but turns out sometimes you make friends. Like sometimes those people that you think are dangerous are not, but you know, that's just me. That's just me being a guy and also being a guy in a band, you know, that there's a level of privilege there and acceptance that people, when they find out who I am or whatever, they're more than willing to like get me a drink and invite me in. But yeah, I can't imagine being a single woman, you know. That's gonna be rough. That sucks, man.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that we don't need to tell any of our male listeners this, because hopefully they're all, you know, respectful like us. But you know, read the signs. And if you do approach a woman at a bar, I'm not saying don't do that, because you know, that's often how couples end up meeting. But if you do approach a woman at a bar and she ain't giving you the kind of, you know, the vibes that suggests she wants your company, then leave him alone.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than forcing your presence on somebody. It's horrible. It's such a demeaning thing to do to somebody. Read their body language, dude. I think your body language alone, you can tell when someone's like shifting away from you and clearly like rolling their eyes and looking away. Take a fucking hint, you know.
I do this a lot when I'm walking home from bar or DJ shifts late at night, because Bristol's a very safe city. Although there's crime here like everywhere, it's a very student-y safe city. And you always see women walking on their own, you know, 2 in the morning. And whenever I do, I always cross the street. So I go the opposite side just to kind of give them their space. I feel like that's a good, you know, subtle move that you can do if you see a woman walking towards you. You don't have to do this, but yeah. I think it's a nice thing to do, is just cross the street and get out their way and open it up. So Scott, back to you. would like to know the song Always, what the meaning and the you know, the subject matter there is. He said it's a song that means a lot to him on a personal level, and he'd love some insight into that. And that reminds me, we need to get back on our Behind the Meaning series, or Behind the Song, I should say, Meaning Behind the Song series, on Patreon, because that's what we do on Patreon, Scotty, is dissect and discuss the meanings of Jesse's various musical endeavors and their output. But yeah, Always.
What's I'll keep it. I'm going to keep it fairly brief on this one.
Is it because, a personal one for you as well?
No, because it the song has means so much to so many people, and people walk down the aisle to it. Like, you know, it's just wild to me how this song took on a life of its own and became people's songs, their anthems, part of their lives. So the reason why I wrote it, you know, to me, it was dealing with death. It was dealing with the fact that I believe when you love somebody and they pass away, they're not truly gone. They still linger on. There's parts of their energy, their spirit that linger and remind you of, whether it's in your memories or whether it's actual things that happen around you. And it's not technically a romantic song. It's just more about, it could be your mother that passed away who sends you signs. You know, it's about kin. It's about blood. It's about love. And the fact that I believe death is a doorway, it's not the end. So that's my brief explanation of it. So it is about love. But when I initially wrote it, it's not like a romantic love. It's more of like a much bigger love. But I do enjoy the fact that people have used it for weddings and it means something to them on that level. But truly, when I wrote that song, I wanted it to be interpreted on different levels. And thankfully, it has been.
There we go. Well, that's the end of the list of songs that, questions that I have written down. Is there anything you want to ask me, Jesse?
Well, there's a couple that I wrote down that I'm not sure you saw.
Okay.
Because on my end, on my page, it was mostly about AI, which, because I posted up
a
picture of AI.
Yeah.
And I kind of was like, maybe that was a mistake.
I always find that whenever you, kind of throw something out to people, what you throw often dictates the tone. It's interesting.
Kind of messed that one up. But so one of the ones I saw that I thought was fairly interesting was, and this is for both of us, but I'm going to give it to you. Would you ever consider having, I don't even know who wrote, actually, I don't know who asked this question. I apologize. I did not write that down. But would you ever have children? Because.
Oh, yeah.
You saw that one?
Yeah,
I did. Because the person who wrote it thought we'd make good dads. So I'll throw it to you. Was that even in your wheelhouse?
Yeah, let me find the name. Give him a shout out, because this was actually my favorite question. I think it was Emma. Emma Holyoke. Yeah, do either of you want children in the future? It can be a tricky subject. So I'm sorry if that's the case for you guys, but you both seem like you'd make amazing dads with your respective outlooks on life. The thought often occurs to me when listening to you. First of all, that is an extremely lovely observation to make, and one that I am certainly very touched by. And it's weirdly something that's been on my mind a lot recently. A lot. I don't know if it's because I've been spending a bit of time with my friends and their kids. I also listened to this podcast recently where it was Bill Stevenson's wife, actually, my friend Stacey, Bill Stevenson's wife, interviewing Fat Mike's ex-wife and Tony Sly from No Use for a Name's, I don't know what the term would be. He's now deceased,
widower,
but yeah, widower. Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. They're both mothers, so all three of them are, and it's just them talking about motherhood. Because I think a lot. It was actually on a show called The Rad Dad Show, which is generally musicians talking to other musicians about being a dad. Stacey's kind of done like a little mini takeover series as part of the show, where she interviews women about being mothers. And it's been a strange kind of journey over the last few weeks, where it's just something that was never on my mind, something that I never thought about, has been on my mind loads. And I don't know at all where I sit with it, because it's a lot for me, as it is for everybody. But I think just because of my upbringing, there's, you know, I don't want to say triggering elements, but there's certainly problematic emotions that come up when I think about parenthood. And there's definitely a lot of things that have happened in my life that have, up until this point, put me off parenthood. And I've had no desire in my life to be a father. And I still don't think that I do. I think I'm very selfish. I'm very self-sufficient. I love my independence. I love my freedom. And I don't really ever spend time with my friends and their kids and look at what they have and go, oh, I wish I had that. I'm lacking that. I want that. I really like being a kind of an uncle figure. And I can't remember who I was talking to recently, but it was somebody sort of telling me about how, since becoming an aunt, it was my friend Helena. She was saying since she's become an aunt, it's opened up all of these feelings in her. She definitely doesn't want to be a mother, but she says when the kid shares your DNA, so by proxy, so not your child, but you know, a sibling's child, she says it is this crazy thing where you hold them and you look at them and you feel, even though it's not your child, like it's still a part of you because it is your blood and your DNA. And she said that becoming an auntie is like the most incredible thing that's happened to her. So I think for me, what I really want is my sister to get her act together and for her to have a kid so I can be an actual uncle, because I'm sort of like an uncle type figure to a couple of my close friends and their kids, but it's obviously not blood related, so it's not the same. Because I like being around them in short doses, but what I like even more is then handing them back and going, over to you, my friend. I'm off to a gig or whatever I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And I have been thinking about it a lot, and I think it's an interesting dichotomy for me, because I love now, and I think unless something radical changes in my life and I meet someone so incredible that it brings up these feelings in me again, but there's pretty much zero hope or expectation in my heart of ever having a romantic relationship in my life ever again. And that's not negative or defeatist or in any way my, you know, dreams aren't shattered. It's more just a very realistic, objective view that I have of my life, where I love my independence. I love being single. The only times in the past where I've been really, truly devastated and depressed and sad and suicidal, dare I say, is because of, you know, relationships that have gone wrong. And I look back on my life and I go, that's pretty much the only times, other than when I lost my job on Kerrang. But that was also kind of like, you know, losing a partner, breaking up with something, if not someone. And I just feel like as long as I'm on my own, everything's all right. And I can deal with whatever life has to throw me. My life is full of love and have so much joy and happiness from so many different facets of my social circles. And so I don't feel the need to be a partner at all. However, there's definitely elements of fatherhood and that kind of paternal instinct that is beginning to creep in. That, you know, could manifest itself in more mentorship type roles, because essentially it's the same thing, right? Is you want to nurture someone and advise and, you know, protect and do these things that I think you can do without being a father and a parent. But I definitely think I have the qualities in some regards that could make a good one, but I also just know I'm a car crash of a human, and and I'm reckless, and I'm, you know, I'm very, very selfish. And so, yeah, I don't think I'm up to the task. However, Uncle Matt is there and always willing to be that guy. And if my sister had a kid, I could only imagine how much I would love that, because I like the idea of seeing something that you've, you know, got direct blood links to as a little tiny human form. But then, you know, that's not reason enough for me to have a kid. It's just to say, look what I made, you know, and my ego and pride and curiosity. So long and short of it from my end is the door's not closed, but it's definitely not on my agenda, and it's not something that I'm actively chasing and can't see happening anytime soon.
I'll keep mine fairly brief. I'm gonna say, just in general, no, that's not even something that I think of. I do love children. I love their innocence. I love their intelligence. I think we have a lot to learn from kids. I am an uncle, and I actually miss them very much lately. They're incredible kids. It's two boys and a girl, Addison, Braden, and Cooper, and they live in Arkansas with my brother. And anytime I'm around them, I'm just fascinated. I'm entertained. I'm proud. I don't see them as much as I'd like to, and I'm not in their life as much as I'd like to, but I have when I travel. I send them video clips of where I am in the world, explain, you know, a monument I'm near. I've done that stuff over the years. And I love them. And I think they're great. And I think it's amazing that my brother was able to have children. But yeah, I'm like you. I'm very selfish with my time. There's still parts of me that need to grow. You know, I'm pushing 45 this year, and I just don't, that door closed years ago. But I do like the idea of mentoring. And, you know, maybe one day I would help, you know, mentor somebody to either, you know, in a band or a musician or something like that. But right now, where I'm at in my life, I can't even fathom it. I have a hard enough time keeping up with my cats and the house stuff around the house and my career.
The dishes. Yeah.
You know, like, I think if I were ever to do, like, make that leap, it would be a dog. Like, that's, to me, is a big responsibility that I'm willing to take on. But a kid, I don't see that happening. And it's not that I don't love kids. I do. I love being around them. I love their energy. I'm still very much a kid. When I get around kids, I guess what I do? I go play with the kids. I'm not hanging out with the adults, you know, observing. I'm playing with the kids. I love that. But that doesn't mean I'm dad material. And I'm honored that someone thinks that. That's really nice. But no, I don't see that in the cards.
Yeah, it's a really generous and lovely observation, and much appreciated. So thank you, Emma. And thank you to everybody. Great questions. Some fun ones, some more reflective ones, and a nice mix. Nice to catch up with you, dude. And yeah, it's kind of, we don't really talk too much at the moment about the future of this show and the plans for it, because we've both just been in our own little rabbit holes doing our own thing. Yeah. But it feels like now is a good time to circle back and get a few in the can and just, you know, keep the fires stoked, because as much as sometimes life does take both of us in different directions, this feels like an anchor to me, this show, and coming back to it always feels super easy and natural and also important. And I think the reason we started it was to, you know, have conversations that make us feel better about the world and ourselves, and hopefully that rubs off on everybody else, and through listening to the show they feel better about themselves and about the world. And yeah, it's going to continue, and it just, you know, I think will, as time evolves, the future of this show will reveal itself. Jesse has a swig of water, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I do agree. You know, dramatic pause. No, I say nothing.
I quit. I'm out. Yeah. That's it. I'm done.
No, it's easy to get sort of caught up in your own life and with your own schedule. Very easy. And I've been very overwhelmed mentally lately. But, you know, just the episode we just did with Father Maximus, to me, the analogy of like getting your cell phone plugged in and you hear that little noise of bloop, and it's starting to recharge. It just, that's why we do this fucking show. It's not about the money. It never has been. You know, of course we wish we were, had more exposure. We wish all these things, but at the core of what we do here, it is just human interaction. It's people's stories. It's perspective. It's, you know, all these important things that on a basic human level, we all need, and to reconnect with that and to sort of put that out into the universe, that's a gift in itself. And I do love that we're going to continue doing this, even though we have gotten busy and, you know, there's so much more we could do. But you're right, the future is unwritten, and we just keep plugging along and doing what we do, because to me, this work is important, not just for people who listen, but just for my life. It sort of anchors me every time we do something. So I appreciate that. And it's great to see you. And I'm so happy that you're busy and you're doing well and you're in good spirits. That makes me really fucking happy.
Yeah, thanks, dude. And sorry I haven't been more communicative and you know, kind of regular.
Understood.
With the connecting. And, you know, I think we always kind of do go off in our little tangents for a while, but it always comes back around.
You'll never get a guilt trip from me. I'm not that person. I understand that life. I live that life. And I'm always here if you need me. But if I don't hear from for a while, I'm not going, oh, that Matt's doctor is not my... Like, never. I'm not that person.
And dig, dude, it's not going to be too long before I get to see you again in person, which is so, so rare. You mentioned to Maximus the other day about, you know, this stuff we could do if we were in the same city or close by. And I think about that often myself. But, you know, it is what it is. And yeah, we'll be seeing each other in Germany and in the UK, and hopefully if your schedule allows, we can link up later in the year after my cruise once again, and can come out and maybe see you in the woods. And
we'll figure it out, man. We definitely need to link up, and at some point I would love to even get over to the UK for like a week of just hanging, and then maybe doing a couple of them, like just something, anything. We'll have to figure that out.
Lovely stuff. Well, if you would like to put yourself forward as a guest for future episodes of Stoke the Fire, the email address is stokethefirepod@gmail.com. We are still more than open and enthusiastic even to receive listener emails and have more listener guests. If you want to suggest more well-known guests from, you know, either the musical universe or other creative areas, perhaps people you think we might not have thought of or might not be aware of that you think would be suitable for the show, whether they're artists or, you know, athletes, whatever they are, whoever they are, please hit us up with your suggestions for guests. Talking points are always appreciated. We don't need to do bespoke Q&A episodes, but if there's, you know, one topic in particular that you feel like this show deserves to kind of cover, then we could maybe do an entire themed episode around that with a specific guest. We're always open to your input. We always want your input, and your support is much appreciated. And thank you to everybody who's helped get us to this stage. The Patreon page is up and running, and you can go over there and get all kinds of extra content. And you can support the show via there, patreon.com/StokeTheFire, a link to which you'll find in the episode description. But that was episode 69 of the show. And next time you hear from us will be episode 70. So we'll have to do something special to mark that landmark. Until then, cheers, Jesse.
Cheers, brother. Good to see you, man.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.